Mrs. McGinty had been killed because she had recognized one of the photographs in an article in a Sunday paper about women who had been associated with murder, and Mrs. Upward had been strangled for the same reason. It seemed likely that one of the women mentioned in the article was living in Brontini. But which of them was it?
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot, Julia McKenzie as Ariadne Oliver, and George Baker as Superintendent Spence in Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead.
I needed quiet and solitude in which to exercise my little grey cells, but these were not to be found at Long Meadows. To the banging doors and squawking hens had been added the incessant hammering of an old typewriter. Robin Upward had taken over one of the first floor rooms as his office.
I just can't concentrate at home. I've already torn up 3 drafts of the script, but I must keep at it. I know the Madre would have wanted me to go on with my work.
I can't find the Minivac form anywhere.
You have left a calendar of spinach on the sofa.
The form only came last week and I must have put it down somewhere. Perhaps it was when I was darning that pullover of Johnny's. Or have I put it away in the bureau? Ah! Here it is! Thank goodness for that! Sorry to have disturbed you.
I have a horror of untidiness. It offends my mind. I could not bear to sit with the confusion she had left, and so I began to put back the letters and the socks and the magazines and the photographs into the bureau. Long Meadows?
We're back where we started. It looks as though you might have been right about Mrs. Upward deliberately pointing to the photograph of Lily Gamble to put you off the scent when, in fact, it was another picture she had recognized.
Why? What has happened?
I told one of my sergeants to go through everything at Laburnum's with a fine tooth comb. I thought there might be a secret drawer in Mrs. Upward's desk.
And was there?
No, there wasn't. But then he started to go through the shelves, and he came across a book published about 10 years ago. And on the flyleaf, written in pencil, was the name Evelyn Hope.
The name Eva Kane took when she left England.
Exactly. So what was Mrs. Upward doing with it? Does that mean she was Eva Kane? But if that's the case, why was she murdered? I leave you to chew over that little problem. Perhaps we could meet later in the day.
If Mrs. Upward had killed Mrs. McGinty, did that mean there was another murderer at work in Brattini? It simply did not make sense. Hello? Long Meadows?
Monsieur Poirot, this is Maud Williams. Can you meet me at the post office in a quarter of an hour?
Maud Williams was looking at the knitting patterns. I bought a book of stamps, and we left together. I fear that Mrs. Sweetman can only have thought the worst about evil old men from the continent.
I don't know whether it's got anything to do with anything, but there was somebody trying to get in at the window of the Weatherby's bedroom this morning.
When was this?
About 11 o'clock. Her ladyship had gone out, and Deirdre was exercising the dog. Old Frozenface was locked up in his study as usual. It seemed a good opportunity for me to have a bit of a snoop round.
Most commendable. Go on.
So I nipped upstairs into their bedroom. There was a ladder up against the window, and somebody was fumbling with the catch. Mrs. Weatherby's had everything locked and barred ever since Mrs. Upward's murder. When the man saw me, he scuttled down and made off.
Can you describe him?
Oh, I only got the briefest glimpse. By the time I got to the window, he was down the ladder and gone.
You're sure it was a man?
All I noticed was an old felt hat. It could have been a woman, I suppose.
Evelyn Hope.
What did you say?
No, I was speaking to myself.
You said Evelyn Hope. That's the name Eva Kane took when she went abroad. It was in the Sunday Comet.
No, mademoiselle, it was not in the Sunday Comet. The police have found the name written in a book at Mrs. Upward's house.
Then Michael was right. She didn't die out there after all.
Michael?
I can't stop. I've left the lunch on the stove. It'll be getting dried up. Oh, thank goodness you're back. Mrs. Carpenter's come to see you. She's been waiting in the drawing room for ages.
Look here. You're a private detective. I want to hire you.
Mon Dieu, madame, I am not a taxi cab.
The police seem to think I killed Mrs. Upward. And I wasn't even there. I was just sitting at home listening to the radio. I didn't even take the call. It was the butler.
And what was this call?
Mrs. Upwood wanted me to go round the night she was killed.
And did you go?
Why should I waste my time talking to that dreary old woman? Why should I go and hold her hand?
Can you prove you were not there?
That's just it. I can't. Guy was out at some ghastly political meeting. Oh, you've got to help me.
I regret that in this affair I act for James Bentley. But if you are innocent, you have nothing to fear.
Sorry, lunch is late, but I can't find the scissors. I've got 3 pairs and they've all vanished. Did I leave them in the bureau by any chance?
And once again, all the drawers were pulled open and their contents emptied onto the floor.
There they are. Lunch won't be long now, Monsieur Poirot.
And so, once again, I set to work to put everything back into the bureau. But then I came across something that had not been there before. It was a photograph. I knew I had reached the turning point of the case. I hurried up to my room with it before Mrs. Summerhayes found that she had lost something else.
251, Mrs. Rendell speaking.
It is Hercule Poirot, madame, and I wish to ask you a question.
Yes, what is it?
Did Mrs. Upwood telephone you on the night of her death?
Yes, she did. How on earth do you know that?
At what time?
About 6 o'clock, I think. The housekeeper took the call. Apparently Robin and Mrs. Oliver were going to the theatre, and she wanted to know if I would go round and keep her company.
And did you go?
I meant to. I really did. But I fell asleep after dinner, and I didn't wake up till 10 o'clock.
Did you tell the police about the call?
No, I didn't. Should I have done? You see, I couldn't help feeling that if I had gone round, she might still be alive. I felt quite ghastly about it.
Our latest information from Australia is that the Evelyn Hope in question died out there 20 years ago.
But she may have arranged a convenient death for herself and returned to England under another name.
You mean she came back and married a wealthy car manufacturer called Upwood?
And she kept an old photograph of herself, which Mrs. McGinty happened to come across.
But we keep coming back to the same problem. If Mrs. Upwood was Evelyn Hope...
Evelyn Hope. That is the key to the problem. When Eva Kane left this country at the time of Craig's execution, she was expecting a child. Now, did she call that child Evelyn Hope, I wonder?
It's perfectly possible, I suppose, but...
Evelyn Hope. Oh, mon Dieu, of course. Oh, how criminally stupid I have been. The whole thing is so simple.
It may seem simple to you, Poirot, but to us lesser mortals...
I must speak to Mrs. Oliver.
She's gone to London for the night and won't be back till tomorrow.
Then I must pay a visit to the theatre at Cullen Quay.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
I must speak to an actor called Michael. I only hope it is the same one.
And then?
If I find what I hope I shall find, then I would like to organize a little reunion at Long Meadows to bring together everyone associated with the mystery. I believe that we are very near the solution, my friend. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Down on one knee, just like I. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Holding her hand out, just like I. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Like this. Do you remember that game? Some of you may have played it as children. Mrs. Upward repeated it to me, but with a difference. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Sticking her neck out, just like I. That is what she said, and that is what she did. She stuck her neck out, and she, like Mrs. McGinty, died.
So, can we take it, Monsieur Poirot, that James Bentley is not the murderer?
It was to supply the answer to that question, Major Summerhayes, that Superintendent Spence asked me to investigate the case, to find out how Mrs. McGinty died and why.
And did you find the answer?
You must be patient, Mr. Carpenter.
in the Sunday Comet, which Mrs. McGinty read on the weekend before her death, four photographs of women linked to celebrated murder cases were published, and Mrs. McGinty recognized one of them. She had seen it in one of the houses where she worked. Now, as you probably all know, I produced these four photographs at Mrs. Upwood's house. I caught a flicker of surprise and recognition on her face.
And she admitted she had seen one of them before.
And when I asked her which photograph, she pointed to the one of the child murderess, Lily Gamble. But that, let me tell you, was not the truth. Mrs. Upwood wished to keep what she had seen to herself. She pointed to the wrong photograph. But one person was not deceived, the murderer. That person knew which photograph Mrs. Upwood had recognized.
So whose photograph was it?
It was that of Eva Kane, the woman who was the accomplice, perhaps even the guiding hand, in the famous Craig murder case. On the next evening, Mrs. Upwood was killed. But three women had received calls from her asking them to come and see her. Mrs. Carpenter, Mrs. Randall, and Miss Henderson. Now, why these three? Had they anything in common? Nothing, except their age. The article in the Sunday Comet mentioned, in terms of sugary sentiment, the daughter of Eva Kane, and the three women invited by Mrs. Upwood were all of the right age to be that daughter.
Oh, but this is preposterous.
Now, patience, I beg you, Mr. Carpenter. Let us consider the three women Mrs. Upwood invited to her house that evening.
But I didn't go. I had other things to do.
I meant to go, but I fell asleep in my chair.
But Miss Henderson did go. She found the house in darkness and could not make anyone hear. That is the story that these three women tell. But there is evidence to contradict it. On the table, where Mrs. Upwood took coffee with her visitor, there were two cups. One of them Mrs. Upwood's, and another with distinct traces of lipstick. And an outside witness has stated positively that she saw a fair-haired woman go into the house that night. And there is evidence of scent. An expensive and exotic scent, which Mrs. Oliver noticed when she went into the house that night and discovered the body of Mrs. Upwood.
It was quite unmistakable.
And does anyone in Broadhinney use that scent?
I believe Mrs. Carpenter does.
It's a lie. I never went anywhere near the place. Guy, can't you stop this?
Let me remind you, Mr. Poirot, there is a law of slander in this country.
Is it slander to say that your wife uses a certain scent? And also, let me tell you, a certain lipstick?
Oh, but this is ridiculous. Anybody could go sloshing my scent about.
Maybe, exactly. Anyone could. But it set me thinking. Scent. And a trace of lipstick. Was it a deliberate attempt to make it look like a woman's murder? And then I reflected on the telephone calls to these three women.
I never spoke to Mrs. Upwood herself. The butler took the call.
And I had a message from the housekeeper.
And Miss Henderson only heard about the call from the German maid.
You mean it may not have been Mrs. Upwood who actually telephoned?
Precisely. The object of the calls was to involve a woman, any woman, in the crime.
But why?
There could be only one answer. Because it was not a woman who killed Mrs. Upwood, but a man.
Of course. Why couldn't I see that?
So, I arrived at this point. A man killed both Mrs. McGinty and Mrs. Upwood. And there could be only one reason for the murders. The photograph that both of them had seen.
But why was it kept?
For sentimental reasons, perhaps. After Mrs. McGinty had been disposed of, it was no longer dangerous. But after Mrs. Upwood's death, it was a damning piece of evidence. And yet it was not destroyed. I have it here.
Look, Chris.
Where did you find it?
I found it in this house. It was in a drawer of that bureau.
Who is it?
It is Eva Kane. And shall I tell you what is written on the back of it? My mother.
What? But I don't understand.
No feeling of guilt, Mrs. Summerhayes. You knew of no reason why you should not keep the photograph. You told us yourself you were an adopted child. I doubt whether you ever knew the name of the woman in the photograph, but somebody else knew. Somebody who can trace his family back 300 years. Someone who would do anything to prevent the world knowing that his wife was the daughter of the murderer Craig and of Eva Kane.
You're talking nonsense. Saying foul things about my wife. You filthy little...
Carry on, Major Summerhayes. Let him finish.
Utterly ridiculous. Anyone can stick a photo in a drawer.
I've never laid eyes on that picture in my life.
No, Mrs. Summerhayes. Because it was put into that drawer only a short time before I found it. And I know by whom. In Mrs. Upwood's house, there was found a book with a name written on the flyleaf. Evelyn Hope. The name Eva Kane took when she left England and which she gave to her child when it was born. The Sunday Comet assumed that the child was a girl, but Evelyn is also a man's name, and Eva Kane's child is a man. Evelyn Hope came to England. He was brilliantly talented and attracted the attention of a rich woman who knew nothing about his origins. He spun her a romantic tale about his mother, a tragic young ballerina dying of consumption in Paris. The woman adopted him, and he took her name by deed poll. But your real name is Evelyn Hope, is it not? Mr. Upward?
Of course it isn't. I haven't the faintest idea what you're going on about.
Have you not? There are people who know you as Evelyn Hope. The name written in the book is in your handwriting, as are the words, my mother, on the photograph. Mrs. McGinty saw that photograph and what was written on it and spoke to you about it after reading the Sunday Comet. She assumed it was a picture of Mrs. Upwood when young, since she had no idea that Mrs. Upwood was not your real mother. But you knew that if it should ever reach Mrs. Upward, that you were the son, not of a ballerina, but a murderess, your world would come tumbling about your ears. So, the next evening, you call on Mrs. McGinty on the way to your broadcasting coolport. You brought out this sugar hammer, and you killed her like this.
It was an accident. I didn't mean to kill her.
And Mrs. Upward, your beloved madre, did you not mean to kill her either?
I wanted to spare her the knowledge of who I really was. I thought it was better for her to die rather than know the truth.
But she already knew the truth, Mr. Upward. You didn't want her to cut you out of her fortune.
No, it wasn't like that at all. It was a terrible mistake.
A mistake, was it, Mr. Upwood?
Anyway, if I did do it, it's not my fault. I couldn't help it. It's in my blood. My mother was a murderess. You can't hang me for something that isn't my fault.
You see if we can't. Mr. Upwood, I must warn you that anything you say...
You can't. I never meant to kill them. I couldn't help it.
At least I shall be spared the horror of that terrible travesty of my poor book being put on stage. But why on earth did the silly creature try to hide that photograph in the Summerhayes bureau? Surely that was a very stupid thing to do.
He had hoped to use it to incriminate Deirdre Henderson. After all, she had been at Mrs. Upwood's house on the night of the murder. He tried to climb into the Weatherby's house, hoping to plant it in her room.
But your friend, Miss whatever her name is, caught sight of him.
He panicked and ran back to Long Meadows. But he knew that I might return at any minute. He hid the picture in the first place he could think of. It was sheer bad luck for him that I came across it and that I knew it had not been there an hour earlier. It was obvious to me only one person could have put it there, and that person was hammering away on his typewriter just above my head.
And so you dashed off to Cullenkey to have a word with that actor, Michael. I never caught what his name was.
Maud Williams had also mentioned the name Michael. He had known Robin Upwood when he first came to England, and I was sure that he would be able to confirm that Upwood's real name was Evelyn Hope.
Of course, when you come to think of it, there was something very unnatural about his attitude to Mrs. Upwood.
Exactly.
the attitude not of a son to his mother, but of a protégé to his patron.
And calling her Madre all the time. What I find really hard to come to terms with is that Robin murdered Mrs. Upward while I was sitting out of the car waiting for him. I wouldn't have thought he could have done it in the time, particularly putting Eve Carpenter's lipstick on the cup and spraying the room with her scent.
Oh, madame, of course there was time, and he had prepared everything beforehand. I mean, think how swiftly a stage can be reset between scenes.
Good theatre, I suppose.
Oh, he was a master of illusion. After all, he killed Mrs. McGinty on his way to a broadcasting call pod, and no one suspected him, because they had heard his voice on the radio that night. But he had ample time in which to do both.
Even so, there I was, sitting in his car while he was strangling Mrs. Upward, and I hadn't the least idea.
I am afraid, chère madame, that your woman's intuition was taking a day off.
But I was right about Dr. Rendell.
Right? In what way, madame?
About his being a murderer. You ask your friend Superintendent Spence when you see him again.
We are to have dinner together as soon as I return to London. But there is a little unfinished business I must attend to first.
I couldn't wait to get away from the Weatherbys. I can't tell you how much satisfaction it gave me to tell that stuck-up old woman I wouldn't be coming back and that she'd have to mix her own eggnog.
So, will you be returning to Breather and Scuttle?
Oh, not on your life. They're a hopeless outfit.
And they have served their purpose.
What do you mean by that?
I have been very discreet, mademoiselle, but I believe that the fair-haired woman who was seen going into Mrs. Upward's house on the night of the murder was you.
What makes you think that?
Why did you come to this part of the world in the first place? Why, when you went to Broadhinney, did you ask Robin Upward for his autograph? You are not the autograph hunter type. When I casually dropped the name of Evelyn Hope into our conversation, how did you know it was the name assumed by Eva Kane?
I've nothing to hide, Monsieur Poirot. Eva Kane killed my mother.
I thought that might be the case. Then your real name is Craig.
I was brought up by my mother's cousin. I always suspected my father had taken the rap for a murder that was actually committed by Eva Kane. When I was grown up, I got a detective agency onto it. They told me Eva Kane had died out in Australia, but had left a son who called himself Evelyn Hope.
So how did you trace him to Broadhinney?
I got pally with an actor called Michael West, who was a great admirer of his. He told me that Hope was writing plays under the name of Robin Upward, and he pointed him out to me one evening in the theatre. He was with his mother, and I jumped to the conclusion that she was Eva Kane, and that she wasn't dead after all.
And that was why you were so keen to help me?
Well, I was convinced that Mrs. Upward had killed Mrs. McGinty, and when I heard from Deirdre Henderson that Robin and Mrs. Oliver were going out for the evening, I thought I would pay a call on the woman I believed to be Eva Kane. I don't know quite what I had in mind. To frighten her, perhaps.
Oh, go on, mademoiselle.
The door wasn't locked, so I walked in. She was sitting there, dead, her face all purple and swollen. All the ideas I'd had in my head seemed silly and melodramatic. So I left. That's all. So what are you going to do about it, Monsieur Poirot?
Nothing at all. Now you can put it all behind you. I wish you good fortune in life, mademoiselle.
Not bad grub they do here. Not bad at all.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I had been dining here on the night you first came to talk to me about James Bentley.
And now we've really got something to celebrate. Not a bad spot of brandy either. You know, Poirot, I don't think I've ever known a case where so many people had something to hide.
Ah, you are thinking of Mrs. Carpenter, perhaps.
Well, if ever a woman really acted guilty, she did. And what for?
Eh bien, what for? Tell me.
Just the usual business of a rather unsavory past she didn't want to come to light. She'd been a taxi dancer.
Comment?
A lively girl with plenty of men friends. And she wasn't a war widow when she turned up in Broadhinney. Only what you might describe as an unofficial wife.
And that would never have done for the wife of a prospective member of Parliament.
It certainly wouldn't. As she was frantic, the whole thing would come to light.
And what about the Rendells? Mrs. Oliver tells me you have proof that he is a murderer.
I wouldn't put it quite like that. It seems that when his first wife died, he had a practice in Leeds. The police got some very nasty anonymous letters saying he'd poisoned her. There really wasn't very much to go on except that her life had been insured in his favour.
I suspect it was not only the police who received the anonymous letters.
Oh, how do you mean?
Mrs. Rendell seemed to have an obsession about them, and she was frightened that my investigation was a pretext for finding out about her husband. And he must have thought so, too. I have a strong suspicion that it was Dr. Rendell who tried to push me under the train.
You'd have a job to prove it. But we'll keep an eye on him.
I think his wife would be wise not to insure her life in his favour. Another brandy, perhaps.
Can't think of any reason why not.
Jules?
At once, Monsieur Poirot.
So, what's to become of James Bentley? He's a poor stick.
At the moment, he seems positively aggrieved that he is not going to be hanged.
What's to become of him?
I trust that he will be saved by the love of a good woman.
You mean your friend Maud Williams?
Oh, no. No, I fear she has far too much vitality for him. I think that Deirdre Henderson would be a better choice.
You'd have a job pricing her away from that poisoned puss mother of hers.
I trust to the power of love. Success is always on the side of the big battalions.
On the side of the big moustaches, I suppose you mean.
Your cognac, monsieur.
Ah, thank you, Jules.
Well, I hope our splendid grub tonight has made up for all those terrible meals you had to suffer at Long Meadows.
Ah, now I think I may have effected a little conversion there, my friend.
How do you mean?
Before I left, I gave Mrs. Summerhayes a lesson on how to prepare an omelette, and she proved a surprisingly apt pupil. And I have sent her a very elementary cookery book. I have high hopes.
Then, here's to bonne cuisine. Is that how you put it, Monsieur Poirot?
Quite right, Superintendent. À la bonne cuisine. And may Mrs. Summerhayes come to understand its supreme pleasures.
In the final part of Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Ariadne Oliver, Julia McKenzie. Superintendent Spence, George Baker. Robin Upwood, Mick Waring. Maud Williams, Beth Chalmers. Maureen Summerhayes, Molly Gaysford. Major Summerhayes, Ian Masters. Eve Carpenter, Angela Sims. Guy Carpenter, Dominic Colchester. Mrs. Rendell, Susanna Corbett. Mrs. McGinty's Dead was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.